Welcome to Project Patient Care, spotlighting patient change agents. Each month, we will highlight people that are having a major impact through their passionate approach to improving health and healthcare for all. Pat Merriweather Argus, Executive Director of Project Patient Care, will be your host for this series. To listen to the recorded podcasts or view our newsletters, please go to www.projectpatientcare.org. In recognition of National Kidney Month and Women's History Month, we are talking with three outstanding women that are making history in addressing chronic kidney disease. Today we have with us Mary Belker, Precious McCowan, and Roberta, or known as Bobby, Reed. I'm going to start off with Mary. Mary, can you share with us a little bit about yourself as a person? Maybe where you're from, your family, your work, your school, and any hobbies you may have?
Sure, thank you. My name is Mary Belker, and I live in Wisconsin. I'm a graduate of the University of Wisconsin. I was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease at the age of 9. During my lifetime, I've undergone dialysis for a period of time. At 17, I had a kidney transplant from my brother, Doug. Since then, I've had 3 more, the last of which was in 1999. As a result of this lifelong experience, I cherish my life, and I possess a strong interest to help improve healthcare. My own illness inspired me to become a fierce healthcare advocate. I have served on this role all of my adult life, and I've been grateful for the opportunity every day. I've served on the United Network Organ Sharing Patient Affairs Committee, the Pediatric Kidney Advisor, the UW Health Patient and Family Advisory Committees, Friends of UW Health Board of Directors, National Kidney Foundation Peer Mentor, Advocacy Committee, and Policy Committee. I also serve on the American Association of Kidney Patients Field Ambassador, the Chronic Kidney Disease Coalition Ambassador, American Kidney Fund Advocate, American Society of Nephrology Kidney Health Initiative, Patient and Family Partnership Council, Society Improved Diagnostic Medicine Project Patient Care, Midwest Kidney Network Board of Directors and Consumer Committee, the National Patient and Family Engagement Learning and Action Network, Health Service Advisory Group. In addition to my volunteer work, I've written a book, Maria Never Gives Up, Are You Like Me? I wrote the children's book in hopes that it will help with other children and their families in their struggle with a health crisis. My professional work experience over the past 30 years includes working with many healthcare organizations. This includes the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, Affinity Strategies, and Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, Department of Defense Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program, and Long Beach Memorial Hospital. I've worked as an organ procurement coordinator, clinical research transplant coordinator, and outreach transplant education coordinator, transplant ambassador, grant writer and reviewer, healthcare administration and asthma, pulmonary disease, and Carbone Cancer Center. Currently, I work as a healthcare consultant, as well as an inspirational speaker, educating and informing attendees with my stories and my personal journey. I enjoy work, spending time with my husband and family and friends, and I can be found on the weekends hiking, doing Pilates, yoga, and traveling. I also enjoy training my golden doodle, Kona, as a therapy dog in hopes of taking him to hospitals and clinics in the future. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Mary. And I think because you were diagnosed so early on in your life that you have really built much of your work around championing the chronic kidney disease and, again, really being an advocate for patients out there. I'm now going to turn to Precious McCowan. And Precious, can you share with us a little bit about yourself as a person, your family, your work, your school, your hobbies? What's going on with you, Precious?
Oh, well, I'm just a simple town girl from Dallas, Texas, born and raised. I'm the oldest of 3 siblings, although I'm the oldest. All of my brother and my sister, they are both very much taller than I am. I think they stole all the height. I'm also have a supportive husband who has been with me through my entire kidney journey. Right now, I'm a full-time PhD student I'm studying mental health, my end-stage renal disease journey, and my mentorship to other patients influenced me to want to examine the mental health field. I get the opportunity to speak with dialysis patients and my dialysis unit just about coping on dialysis, helping to educate them about managing their chronic kidney disease. And so that is a joy and a passion of mine. So that all progressed me to want to study mental health. And when I'm not busy organizing and dealing with other organizations that I am a part of, that is ESRD, end-stage renal disease, or chronic kidney disease related, I like to talk on the phone to my friends or meet them in person. You know, I like to get away from the whole social media environment from time to time, since we are living in an age where everyone is all into electronics and the whole networking thing. So talking to my friends in person and talking to them on the phone is something I like to do when I'm not busy advocating.
Well, thank you, Precious. And we love talking to you all the time. So we cherish our conversations with you and also all the education that you have provided to so many patients that are undergoing dialysis and facing chronic kidney disease. I'm now going to turn to Bobby Reed. And Bobby, can you share us a little bit about yourself as a person? Because I know you also have gone through a journey, and your family, your work, your school, your hobbies, what you like to do.
Sure. I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm married with two adult children, Alex and Michael. They are 27 and 28 years old. And I work with my husband in a family-run insurance agency where we provide auto, home, business, and life insurance to customers within the state of Pennsylvania. My main job there is to handle the management of the office. I spend our marketing dollars, and I handle most of the life insurance sales. I attended Indiana University of Pennsylvania, where I majored in family and consumer sciences, and I minored in business and economics. In my spare time, I enjoy advocating for the kidney patients. Specifically, I work with the National Kidney Foundation, the American Association of Kidney Patients, the CORI. I did do a special research project with the Society to Improve Diagnosis with Medicine. And I enjoy traveling, and in my spare time, I really enjoy playing on the computer. That's my escape mechanism.
Well, thank you, Bobby. And I know you've been keeping busy. When you say travels, I'm oftentimes looking at, I do look at Facebook. We are Facebook friends. And I oftentimes see your many different travels around the world. So thank you, Bobby. Approximately 30 million people with chronic kidney disease, and we're going to use the term CKD, standing for chronic kidney disease. For those not familiar, chronic kidney disease cannot be cured, but it can be managed. There are five stages of CKD, and patients at stage five are typically on dialysis or have a kidney transplant. It is estimated that 48% of those that are at stage four are unaware that they have CKD. It's a silent disease with oftentimes no symptoms. In the past, it was known as an older person's disease, but no longer. It affects all ages, with about 50% of those on dialysis now under the age of 65. Precious, can you tell us about when you were first diagnosed with chronic kidney disease and your treatment journey?
Yes, Pat. Thank you. So in 2007 is when my doctor told me that my kidney function was slightly declining and that I was in the first stage of CKD. At that time, I had no clue what CKD was or what caused it. I later learned that diabetes is the number one cause of CKD. Now, I've been a diabetic since the age of 9, and Pat, I must admit that while I was away in college for 4 years, I did not manage my diabetes well. So when I learned that diabetes was part of CKD, I felt guilty I was like, oh, I did not take care of myself. So in 2009, I remember being very sick and in and out of the hospital with severe nausea and vomiting, and was told that I was in stage 3 of CKD. Moving on to 2010, at the age of 27, my kidney function drastically declined. I was in the last stage of CKD, which is stage 5. And I had to start emergency dialysis in order to save my life. So it was very severe for me at that time. Once released from the hospital, I remember starting in-center hemodialysis, meaning that I would receive my dialysis treatment inside of a dialysis clinic versus receiving it at home or doing it myself at home. And then 4 months after starting dialysis, I received both a kidney and pancreas transplant. So I was excited during that time. I was like, yay, no more dialysis for me. And the kidney transplant was to cure me of diabetes, where I wouldn't have to take the 5 insulin shots that I had to take since the age of 9. So I was excited about that. But unfortunately, 7 months after my transplant, my body rejected both the transplanted organs. So for the past 9 years, I have been back on in-center hemodialysis. Although I have had health challenges in the past with health education and management of my CKD, my health has tremendously improved, and I am now registered for a second kidney transplant.
Wow, that is a journey, Precious, that you've been on. But congratulations. We're very excited. We can't wait to hear about your kidney transplant coming up. Again, congratulations. Thank you. Thank you. Bobby, I'm going to turn to you because I know you have a son that was first diagnosed with chronic kidney disease and then began a journey for not only him, but also you and your family. Can you share with us his first diagnosis and then the journey you've been on?
Sure. In 2013, Alex was a senior at Penn State University, and he played on the baseball team there for Penn State Altoona for 5 years. And in May of 2013, he graduated. Just 2 weeks after he graduated, he developed extremely high blood pressure. We had to rush him to the hospital. He was hospitalized, and he nearly died. We were told by the doctors that his kidney function had been impacted by the high blood pressure, but because he was young and healthy and he was an athlete, that his function would likely bounce right back and he should be just fine. They would follow up on him over the summer. By the time October came about, he was told his functioning kidneys were at 16%. He had to start dialysis right away and begin searching for a living kidney donor. He was so young, he would likely need multiple organ transplants in his lifetime. Kidney transplant is a treatment and not a cure. Alex crashed into dialysis on December 1st, 2013. Because his fistula did not have enough time to mature, he had to have emergency surgery for a catheter or access point. And because he lived alone at home, he decided to do home hemodialysis with me as his caregiver. It took him over 6 months to get onto the transplant wait list because the doctors felt they needed to figure out what caused his blood pressure to go so high and destroy both his kidneys so fast. To this day, they don't have an answer to that question. We managed to get on the transplant wait list after 6 months' time, and that is when my search began to try and find him a kidney donor.
Wow. That's an amazing journey that you've been on, Bobby. And I know your son's so fortunate to have you at his side because it is a journey. and so young. That's what I think we're hearing, is that chronic kidney disease starts at an early age. And I'm going to turn to Mary, because I know you were quite young when you were first diagnosed. Can you tell us a little bit about the time and your treatment journey that you've been on?
Sure, thank you. I was diagnosed at the age of 9 with proliferative glomerulonephritis. And at that time, kids were not transplanted, and they were also not put on dialysis because of the fact at that time that it was very difficult for children. So they did not dialyze them or transplant them at the early 70s in the state of Wisconsin. And so because of that, my parents were actually told that I had 6 months to live. I kind of make the comment that I didn't know this at the time. However, I can tell you that my 10th birthday was like the best birthday party that I ever had. Lots of friends and family and toys and things like that. So I knew something was up. I also, during that time, I was first sent to a community hospital, and they could not figure out what was wrong. So I was in the hospital for a couple of weeks. I gained about 20 pounds of fluid at that time. So it was difficult to move and breathe at the age of 9. At one point, they finally decided to send me to a larger hospital and to a nephrology physician. And at that time, they did a kidney biopsy. And with that kidney biopsy, they were able to distinguish that I had kidney disease. I had been sick prior to being 9 and being diagnosed off and on through my childhood. But at 9 is when I got, you know, severely ill. And whether I was going to survive this was a difficult time for me. Missed a lot of school. They put me on experimental medication at that time, hoping that they could slow down the progress of the kidney disease. Whether that worked or not, we don't really know, but I did actually go into a bit of a remission for some time until I ended up on dialysis when I was in high school. And at that time, I was on dialysis for a couple of months, and one day my brother came in and did not like watching me on dialysis and seeing how poorly I was doing with having heart problems and such, and decided that he wanted to be a donor. At that time, we went back to the university hospital. He was tested. He was a perfect match. And we continued with having dialysis, continued until that time. And then I had the transplant for my brother. I did wonderful, and, you know, he saved my life. So Doug really was a huge part of changing that journey for me and giving me back the end of my school year in high school.
That's amazing at such a young age. And special thanks to your brother, too, because, again, without that transplant, it would have been extremely challenging. And it sounds like everyone that's on this call was also surrounded by a supportive family, a family and friends that really rallied around you and really supported you. I know that this month is the National Kidney Month, and the Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Czar addressed the National Kidney Foundation Summit this month. He said that his focus and the department's focus is on screening and detection of CKD, improved treatment, and increasing transplants. As you said before, many of you, high blood pressure and diabetes are oftentimes key contributors to CKD. Most people do not know their CKD stage, right? I think we can ask just about anyone, and most of them have no idea what we're talking about. But there are two tests that will identify your CKD stage. One is a urine test for blood or protein in your urine. The second is a blood test called GFR that evaluates how well your kidneys are working to filter out the waste in your blood. From these two tests, they can calculate what your estimated CKD state is, and pending a positive result that you have CKD, your physician and care team can really help you manage your CKD. For those that do have CKD and are on dialysis or have had a transplant, maintaining one's health is important. There are an estimated 100,000 people waiting on the kidney transplant list. All three of our guests know about transplants. We hope that if you have not signed an organ donor card, that you do it today. Bobby, I know you frantically were seeking a donor for your son when he became ill. Can you share with us how you went near and far with your outreach efforts?
Yeah, so I decided in my mind that I had to sell someone on giving my kid a kidney. There was a lot going on our plate at the time. You know, we were doing the home hemodialysis. He was not completely doing it with the fistula because it hadn't had time to develop. We had issues with insurances and coverage to just get to doctor's appointments. A lot was going on, but I made this a priority to find him a kidney. So the first thing I did was make a list of every acquaintance, organization, workplace, school, church, affiliation that we as a family had. That included the extended family, you know, grandparents, parents, you know, everybody. I started with the high schools that my husband and I attended, and I asked the alumni associations to post or write something about Alex and our need to find a kidney. That first post was just a mere two or three sentences. Anytime anyone did anything, I reposted it onto social media and I thanked them. I also thanked them in writing with a personal note too. I asked people to like my posts and to reshare it to their friends on social media. Life was too busy with Alex to do this all at once. I set a goal to do two or maybe three posts a week. One of the posts was an article that the Penn State Alumni Association wrote. Little did I know that would be the one that someone saw and acted upon. The thing is, his donor, Alex's donor, was turned down by the transplant center because he had to lose 30 pounds. Alex's donor took 6 months to lose the weight and came back to Pittsburgh from New Jersey and was reevaluated, and this time he passed the test. All the while, not knowing any of this was going on, I continued with my post. Alex's donor was watching and he was reading. They were his inspiration to lose the weight, and it made him even more determined to give Alex his kidney. After giving Alex his kidney, he told us he wanted to lead by example and give back because giving was important to him. It made him feel like a better person. He saw students, his own kids, at Penn State acting and doing things that maybe might not have been community service oriented. And he felt that he was contributing to that, doing the same by inviting them to tailgate parties, and he gave alcohol to kids over 21. But he wanted to instill upon those students, those graduating young people, that it was important to do community service and to give back to the community. So he decided to do this. And after giving Alex his kidney, he wrote a post that went viral on social media about the fact that he implored it upon people just to do something because it would make them feel better. And he felt better for doing what he did too. He wasn't necessarily saying give an organ, but to do something. And that was his example.
Wow, that's a very powerful story, and it shows the importance of giving back, but also the importance of persistence, because you were determined to get your son a kidney transplant and to have, again, far and wide searching for a donor. So thank you, Bobby. And Mary, I know that you've had multiple transplants. Can you explain the impact the transplants has had on you?
Yes, I wanted to kind of explain it a little bit, that I've had actually four kidney transplants. I've been very fortunate that I've had living related and also from deceased donors. I believe that's given me that this is really life is a gift, and that live each day to the fullest. I also want to recognize that having four transplants has been difficult, that I had them basically because of the fact that dialysis was not working well for me. While I was on the dialysis the different times, each time was told that I probably would not make it a year on dialysis. due to having a lot of complications with being on dialysis and not feeling well, affecting my heart, affecting blood pressure and such. So I was very fortunate that I had a living related for my brother and did very well. I had the reoccurring kidney disease, which basically did not happen with the type that I had, but it did happen. I had some rejection, I had some CMV, other infections that caused them not to last. Each of them were successful. The first one was 4 years, second one was 4 years, third was 11, and I'm currently on 19 and looking at 20. Again, as I mentioned, I feel that life is a gift to cherish, live each day, and I think I have found that, as mentioned prior, that it's a treatment, it's not a cure-all. I also take and look at every day as, again, a gift. And I do have a motto that I live by. And the motto is live, laugh, love. Live every moment, laugh every day, and love beyond words. And I really take that to heart to really cherish my life, do the things that I enjoy doing, and spend time with my family and friends. Because we never know when that day can change. And I, from experience, have experienced that personally. So I encourage all people to really take each day as it comes and live every moment.
Oh, Mary, that's very inspirational. And I love your motto, live, laugh, and love. That's something we can all live by and laugh every day and love everyone along the way. So thank you so much. And I'm so happy that you've been able to have the transplants. And it just emphasizes the importance of donors. So thank you, Mary. Precious, I know you're on a waiting list for a kidney transplant. Can you maybe explain to us the process for getting on the list?
Sure. When first listed for a transplant in 2010, there was a very comprehensive medical examination that was done. Every organ in my body had to be evaluated for clearance to receive a transplant, along with the evaluation of my weight and my blood flow. I remember my evaluation being on hold for 2 months because I had not yet started dialysis. Since I was first listed for both the kidney and the pancreas transplant, there was a cardiology test that needed to be done. This test required them to use like a solution or a dye. And by using this solution, it was a possibility that my kidneys could shut down completely. Medical professionals did not want to pursue the procedure without me being on dialysis. But little did I know that 2 months later, I would have to start dialysis treatment. Once I started dialysis, I was able to continue on with the process. And as I stated earlier, in 2010, I received a kidney and a pancreas transplant. I am also now relisted again for a second transplant, but this time they would only do kidney. My transplant team do not think that I am a good candidate to receive both a kidney and a pancreas again. They think that the surgery was a little bit intense and that was probably the cause and the reasoning for my first rejection. This time I have waited for 8 years and my health condition is evaluated annually to assure that I am still a good candidate for a transplant. The wait time for me to receive a transplant is longer this time because I have received a previous transplant and various blood transfusions over the years. So this means that I am at risk of having very high antibodies. Antibodies are substance in the body that fights off things that are foreign, like a transplanted organ. So my antibodies are at the maximum percent. So although, you know, research and science indicate that it is very rare that someone with the maximum amount of antibodies will receive a transplant like myself, I truly believe that anything is possible. So I would just, you know, continue to wait my turn, and maybe one day I'll be called soon for that kidney transplant. And I would also like to add that I truly believe in the Living Donor Organization. I know that that is also dear to my heart. In 2010, my two-year-old son passed away unexpectedly, and my husband and I, we decided to donate his organs to be a blessing to someone and to also give life.
Wow. An amazing journey that you've been on, Precious, and it does highlight the importance. It's not only the donor, the organ donor card that needs to be signed and recorded, but also the ability to have a living donor. So people getting tested and participating in different initiatives to respond to those that need kidneys. And after hearing our three speakers today, of course, we're all thinking, I need to sign that card and I need to get tested to see if I could also be a match for a kidney donation. So again, very important and it's life-saving. So thank you. Thank you. Mary, I'm going to turn to you because I know you're very actively involved in the National Kidney Foundation. And can you share with us what you're doing as a patient, family, and caregiver advocate?
Sure. I'm very involved with policy work. I think it's really important to go to the top to try to find policies that will help detour, for instance, or detract away from living donations. And so one of the things that I've been doing is working with the Living Donor Protection Act and working with congressmen and women and the representatives locally and nationally to encourage them to understand and educate them on what the Living Donor Protection Act would do. I also am involved with the bill that would be part of the legislation for the comprehensive immunosuppressive drug coverage that would be for kidney transplant patients. And that act is actually to extend the Medicare coverage for immunosuppressive drugs for patients and recipients. Those Medicare eligible currently ends usually at 36 months post-transplant. And this legislation would ensure kidney transplant recipients would have access to the life-saving medications and removes the barrier many patients face with having a new kidney. This particularly is very important to me as well. As an example, straight out of college, obviously I had a transplant. I was on these medications at 36 months. I was working full time and I lost that 36 months after that, lost the coverage for my medications. At that time I was working, thought, oh, I have pretty good coverage. I actually work in healthcare, the hospital I worked at, I had coverage, but it was 80-20. So in that, between a few areas of healthcare issues that I had during that time, I had over $40,000 worth of debt. And fortunately, I actually had credit cards, and I actually put those medications on my credit card. I think about, what if I wouldn't have had that credit card? I would have been without my medication, and how would I been able to pay for that? So each time I maxed out a credit card, I would get another one to pay for my medications. That would really help us with patients that really are having problems with the coverage of the medications. So to me, working in policy, mentoring other patients and family members is really another area that, because of my experience being a child and going through many of these things, I always feel if I can help one other person, I've made my goal. And I think the other is spreading education on the need for organ donors and what that means, and really showing by example and giving information to, so I will work health fairs, I will go to a variety of different events to share my story and hopefully inspire someone to be a donor and go forward on helping others.
Oh, thank you, Mary. And those two pieces of legislation that you mentioned are very key. Can you just briefly tell us where they're at and what the status may be?
Sure. On February 14th, the Living Donor Protection Act was reintroduced, and that's a very exciting time for us that it has been reintroduced. And I know after being in D.C., I've already had two of the folks that I met with have also signed on. So that's very exciting. And the second one that I had mentioned about the immunosuppressive bill, we are looking for that to be introduced in the very near future by Congressman Ron Kind and Congressman Bill Posey. And very excited as well is Ron Kind, actually, as a friend from high school. So to have him actually being one of the co-sponsors for that bill is really inspiring to me, that I actually sat next to him in a classroom. So I'm very excited to mention those two. And there is a third, is that we really want to get more funding into looking at kidney disease and trying to find a cure and trying to find alternatives to dialysis, whether it's a portable kidney or such, or portable dialysis, things that could, you know, be hooked up. And I know KidneyX is putting money into that, and we're very excited that there is funding coming forward. But we need to continue that fight and continue to push that we need more funding, because things haven't changed in years.
Oh, and thank you so much, Mary, for that background. And we'll have to keep following you so that we can get an update, and also how we can be activated as well to assist in those pieces, valuable pieces of legislation and the funding. Precious, I know that you're very active with the ESRD network, as well as serving as a mentor and working with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Can you share with us what you're doing?
Well, what I'm doing right now, trying to build a stronger mentorship program within ESRD Network 14 and also at my dialysis unit. We've learned that, you know, mentorship is needed and it's very productive. And with mentorship, we're able to learn from each other and help each other out and understand dialysis and share our challenges and experiences. And also with those challenges, able to share how we have coped on dialysis. Also at this time, my network has produced a hope kit. And what this hope kit is, we're hoping to get it out to hospitals, because patients, when they are diagnosed with end-stage renal disease and know that they have to go on dialysis, they learn in the hospital. A lot of people, like you said before, Pat, they don't even know that they have a CKD. So we want this tool to go out to hospitals, and they are able to give them to their patients. And inside of this tool, it has patient stories. My story is featured in it. It also has educational resources, a renal diet, fluid management. It has poetry of hope. It has resources for patients to reach out to when they're in time of need, whether it's resources within their community, resources within the network. It is all in this hope kit. So that is something that we are working on. And another thing that we have found to be very productive and resourceful is the patient engagement calendar that Network 14 has produced. It was created by patients for patients. And it is an educational topic that is covered every month. And dialysis patients have learned from it because it's simplified. And it doesn't give them a lot of information all at once, because once we first start dialysis, we are bombarded with so much. So this patient engagement calendar is very simplified, easy to follow, and easy to read. It has also been recognized by CMS, and CMS has agreed for us to revise this calendar annually, because, you know, every year, things change with dialysis and for chronic kidney disease. Also, I would like for everyone to know that CKD is a silent condition that quickly progresses. So please follow through with healthcare screenings in order to know the status of your health. Also, studies have shown that early detection and prevention lowers the chances of end-stage renal disease and dialysis. So also, I would like you all to know that more health education prevention, resources, and research related to this condition is what this country can do to tackle CKD.
Well, thank you, Precious. And you certainly have raised the awareness of the importance of mentorship and continuing education, even for those patients that are on dialysis and undergoing treatment, as well as the importance of early detection. And I can't say enough about that. You're right. It's a silent disease, oftentimes with no symptoms. But there are tests, as we mentioned, that can help patients identify if they are at CKD and what stage they're at, so that, again, they can provide different interventions. It's not a cure, as all of you have said, but there is a way of managing the disease. So thank you, Precious. And Bobby, I know as a family member, a caregiver, how have you been activated to also take a leadership role, and what are you doing now?
Well, I advocate for kidney patients in many ways. I'm active with the American Association of Kidney Patients, where I am the Pennsylvania ambassador. And last year, I spoke at their national patient meeting about the ups and downs of being a caregiver. I gave kidney patients and caregivers resources to help them deal with and navigate their chronic kidney disease. I work with the National Kidney Foundation, too, on their Kidney Advocacy Committee. In fact, I'm the leader of Region 2 for that group, which is made up of 5 eastern states. I make it a point to work with my local Pittsburgh National Kidney Foundation office as well, and I help at events to raise awareness. I even spoke at the UPMC Acute Kidney Injury Symposium late last year to physicians, patients, and caregivers about how the AAKP and NKF can be a resource to help patients that they work with every day. I'm involved with research through the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. The CORI has appointed me their Pennsylvania ambassador. Recently, I completed a research project funded by the CORI with the Society to Improve Diagnosis in Medicine, where I was a patient partner to help identify medical errors in diagnosis. I represented the kidney community. All the things that I do because I want to learn. I learn from the things that I do, and I take that information back, and I help kidney patients. It got to a point with my son that I was being overbearing with him. I was still in the mode of trying to find him a donor. So I sort of shifted gears with that, and I became an advocate for everybody else out there. In fact, one of the things that I did with the National Kidney Foundation is I helped write. I'm a main contributor to their Big Ask, Big Give program, which has been rolled out nationwide, and it is a program designed to help kidney patients and caregivers find living donors to get their transplants for kidneys. That's just one example of my involvement. Another thing that I did a few years ago, 2 years ago, really, I worked with the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine in Washington, D.C., where I spoke before them on prescription medications. It was a workshop that they were doing, and I gave the patient perspective on how difficult it was to manage medications and how difficult it was to get communication between physicians and practitioners to the patient to deal with it. You know, one person can't do this by themselves. They need somebody beside them to help them through it. And I was that person for my son. And I help others find their way by getting partners to help their loved ones get kidney transplants and find their way through kidney disease.
Well, Bobby, thank you for your leadership, and you've been sort of thrust into this position and have really taken it on to not only be involved in the writing of the legislation, the writing of the ask that the National Kidney Foundation has, but also to be involved in research, because research is so key. As had been said before, sometimes we don't even know the reason behind the kidney disease, or even the reason behind rejection of a transplant or responses to treatment. So again, research is critically needed in chronic kidney disease and ESRD. Now I'm going to turn to Precious. Precious, you recently gave an opening presentation to over 3,000 healthcare leaders at the National Quality Conference, and you've been very active with the ESRD network. What do you want people to know about CKD, and what can all of us do to help?
Yes, Beth, thank you. What I would like for people to know is that CKD is claiming the lives of so many across the country. What I would like for them to know and do is very simple. Get yourself checked out, create awareness, educate yourself, participate in research. That's basically it. Just bring awareness, participate in research, know your health condition, know your health status, and let's tackle CKD together.
All right. Thank you, Precious. And I hope everyone does the next time they visit their physician or make an appointment and really see about getting yourself tested and get those test results and have it interpreted as to what it means and where you might be if you do have CKD. Thank you, Precious. And now, Bobby and Mary, I know you recently returned from Washington, D.C., advocating with the National Kidney Foundation. What do you want people to know about CKD, and what can we all do to help? And Bobby, I'm going to start with you first.
Hey, as Mary already mentioned when she was talking, when we were in Washington, D.C., we made three asks of our legislators. And they were first to co-sponsor and pass the Living Donor Protection Act, which is H.R. 1224. And this would help tremendously because it ties into my son's journey, and it is really a journey to go on with it, because in his particular case, the baseball players, the other students, the young people really wanted to help him and give him a kidney so that he could go on and live his life. It wasn't that they didn't want to do it. They really did. They couldn't, because they were impacted by not having the guarantees of having a job to go back to, or having insurance, or even long-term care type of thing later on in life. They were just starting their careers out. They couldn't do it. His donor, Alex's donor, was a 57-year-old man, and he had already accomplished and was willing to take those risks. The second thing that they asked for when we were in D.C., was the Medicare coverage to be extended for immunosuppressant medications. Do you know that on November 30th, 2018, we reached that 36-month point? And all of our insurance coverage and medication coverage went away. The cost for those medications for my son each month are $2,300 a month. He never worked. He played baseball when he was at school. He didn't have a job because he plunged right into dialysis and needing a kidney. So we didn't have, and he does not have, an insurer. He didn't have insurance. We were forced onto the Medicaid system in order to make sure that he has those life-sustaining medications. If that would change, if that one simple law to extend Medicare coverage for those medications, maybe we could get my son back onto the working rolls and be a contributor to society rather than a drain on it. The last thing that tied into this was the need for research. And I know, Pat, you've mentioned that throughout here too. It is vitally important. It's always in the back of my mind because it sticks in my mind that that kidney that Alex was given may not last him the rest of his life. And when it comes time again, because it probably will, that he will need another kidney transplant or some form to keep him alive, I am hoping, or I am really wanting, that research would have enabled that to progress to the point that there is something other than age-old dialysis, which has been here for many, many years already, to sustain his life. So really, my final statement is, what can people do out there? They can contact their legislators and say, look, hey, we support this Living Donor Protection Act thing, and we support Medicare coverage being extended to save these people, because it's a far less expensive alternative than having to have someone be put on dialysis and to sustain their lives. And we support the research, extending the research capabilities to many different avenues. Just let them know. And they can do that very easily by getting on their computer and even sending them a message, or picking up the phone and calling them, because it really does make a difference in those legislative offices. They keep track of everything that comes through, and just a number of calls from a particular, on a particular subject matter, can really sway and make a difference to the legislator to get one more person to sign on to do this, to make it a successful event for everybody, for the thousands and hundreds of thousands of people with chronic kidney disease.
Well, thank you, Bobby. And you've given us good guidance as to what we can all do to step up and make a difference. And now I'm going to turn to Mary. And Mary, I know you were also in Washington, D.C. What would you tell us to do that will help with the chronic kidney disease and the activities that are going on in D.C.?
Thank you. As Bobby and Precious, I believe, have already mentioned many great things that you can do, let me just reiterate, I think that CKD really does change the quality of life for patients and families. It also claims lives. And I think the awareness that this happens, and that maybe even the person next door has chronic kidney disease, we need to be more aware, and we need to show that there's an awareness out there that we can actually talk with others and educate the general public as well as our representatives of how this impacts us, our community. I believe research is another area that we need to increase and continue. Years ago, we didn't have dialysis. We chose who dialyzed and who didn't, basically because of the reason that dialysis machines were not readily available. I think that we need to look back at our history, but I think we need to go forward. And I would hope that by all of us sharing our stories, that these can be very powerful tools that we can share with our legislators. So I urge people to contact those legislators, let them know their stories, and continue the fight and continue the journey of how we can help and how we can share our story to make life in the future better for patients with CKD.
Well, thank you, Mary. And again, so inspiring. And I also want to congratulate you, because I know that you're the recipient of the Celeste Castillo Lee Award, and it's the highest honor given by the National Kidney Foundation to a distinguished kidney patient who exemplifies NKF's mission and also patient-centered care. So congratulations on your award. And I really just want to thank you, Mary, Precious, and Bobby, for your selfless service to others. You're doing this so that others may live and thrive due to your efforts to raise awareness about CKD. And again, if anything, we've been inspired by your stories, by your personal journey, and most important, by your commitment to make a difference. So you are making a difference, and we thank you. Thank you so much. If anyone would like to get in touch with the Champion Change Agents, Precious, Mary, and Bobby, please go to www.projectpatientcare.org and look under podcasts for their information. Thank you all, and thank you for sharing with us and helping us actually be activated so that we can assist you with CKD. Thank you.